Okay, so thanks to the organizers of this program, especially Joe and Melanie, for letting me talk here. So the title of this talk is Warped Ideas, Three Spaces. So I will insist on warped ideas, three spaces in topologically massive gravity, and I hope I will have time to get into some string theory aspects of the story. So here is the plan, and here is a legend for all the collaborators that are involved in this project. And I forgot a lot of references, so if you feel that I should add more, just don't hesitate to tell me. And if you have questions, please interrupt me and I'll try to answer them. So, the reason why I started writing on the blackboard before you enter is that because I just wanted to remind you some things that we heard yesterday in Melanie's and Geoffrey's talk. But on the other hand, once I've been told that you should never underestimate the satisfaction that people have to hear something they already know, so this is why I will just briefly flash some of the important things in 2 plus 1 dimensional gravity, and that will be important for the talk here. So just let me remind you some important ingredients of 2 plus 1 dimensional gravity with a negative cosmological constant. So this is the actions. The action here are the equations of motion, and so as we heard yesterday, every solution is locally ADS3 space, which is a maximal symmetric solution to the equations of motion, which has an isometric group, which is SL to R cross SL to R, which has a conformal representation as in the Einstein static cylinder. So the boundary is two-dimensional flat space. And so there are very nice features and very important features about that theory. So the first one was pointed out by Brown and Eno in 86. And they actually explained us that the classical phase space of solutions can be defined, as I said, by a set of boundary conditions, which defines for you actually what you mean by asymptotically ADS3 space, which means the spaces that at large radius behave like ADS3. So the interesting thing of their work is that they show that there is on this phase space an action of an infinite dimensional symmetry group, which is actually generated by these kind of diffeomorphism, which depend on two arbitrary functions of x plus and x minus. X plus and x minus are related to the time and the angle of ADS3 by this relation. And one can look at the algebra generated by the diffeomorphism, and they generate actually two copies of a Witt algebra or a Virasoro algebra. We don't really know how to call them, after what Geoffrey told us yesterday. So, we have a classical phase space, we have an action of a classical symmetry on that phase space. So what we know in general is that to every symmetry we have an associated charge, and so these charges will generate through their Poisson bracket an algebra which usually is isomorphic to the algebra of symmetries of the theory. So this is in general, the case of that we are used to, but in whole generality there can be a difference between the algebra of charges and the algebra of symmetries, which manifests itself through the possible addition of a central extension. And this is what happens for the Virasoro algebra. So the algebra of asymptotic charges is the following, and it actually shows a central extension, so an anomaly term. And this has been computed by, presumably by Brown and Eno in their paper, and is given by this quantity. So, on general grounds, we know that once we have a classical theory which is described by a phase space with a classical action, with an action of a symmetry group on this phase space, generally, if we quantize the theory, what happens is that these states, the states of this phase space, will form representations of that symmetry group. So this means that if we are able, or when we will be able to quantize ADS3 gravity, presumably the quantum theory will be a two-dimensional conformal field theory, because so the classical solution will be mapped to states in the representation space of the symmetry algebra. So this points toward the existence of a two-dimensional CFT. Okay, so this is the first ingredient. So the next ingredient is the fact that 2 plus 1 dimensional gravity with lambda negative admits black hole solutions. These are the BTZ black hole solutions. So, of course, after what we have said, these solutions are locally ADS3, so of course they have no curvature singularity. So I will explain once again what the singularity is indeed. And so a property of these solutions is that they can be obtained from ADS3 by performing discrete identifications in ADS3. along particular curves, and these curves are actually integral curves of Killing vector fields. So let me just be a little bit more precise. So actually there is a nice identification. So ADS3 space can be identified roughly with the SL2R group manifold. This is in the same way as the tree sphere can be seen as a group manifold of the SU2 group. And so, for example, you can write an element of SL2R well, in terms of say Pauli matrices. That way. So okay, so if you write the B invariant killing metric on this group manifold, that which is given by simply trace of G minus J DJ, J minus J DJ, you will simply get the usual metric on ADS3 where the rho here is related by the R with well R is sine hyperbolic of rho. So of course, by construction, what are the isometries of this metric? So this metric is bi-invariant, so the isometries of this metric are just the left and right translation acting on this element G. So the killing, so the isometries are just G is sent an exponential Px G. So left translation, and I will write the corresponding killing vector as x0, and we have the right translation. Okay, and so, well, we can choose, of course, a basis of killing vectors, and a convenient basis is given if we write the commutation relations of SL2R in the following way, with the usual Cartan raising and lowering operators. I define T as E minus F. So one can check that actually the generator H is space-like, T is time-like, and E is null. So, okay, so in the following, I will just denote a killing vector of ADS3 by a couple of generators like XY. So XY, yeah, is ADS3 killing vector. So what are the killing vectors that you have to use to make identification in ADS3? So these are the following. Okay, so. So from ADS3 to BTZ, so you have to identify points discretely along these curves. And so what is the xi? So the xi is given by this guy. So this gives you the generic BTZ. So actually, it's important to notice that depending on the kind of black hole you are interested in, the killing vectors that you have to pick are a different type. And you cannot map them by using SL2R cross SL2R transformation.
Stefan?
Yeah.
Do you think you could write a little bit bigger?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Some of us old folks. Okay.
Where are you? Oh, yeah.
There's room in the front.
Yeah, don't be shy, you can sit there. Okay. Actually, this is why I wanted to start writing, but I realized that anyway, I wrote quite small also, this blackboard, so okay. So these are the identifications that you have to do in ADS3 to get the BTZ black holes. And of course, what is important is that so you don't want to get closed time-like curves in your resulting space-time. So the regions where the norm of the identification killing vector, which tells you that the curve along which you identify is time-like, have to be cut out to be excluded from ADS3. So actually, BTC black holes are a quotient of a part of ADS3 and not of the whole ADS3. So for example, if you look at the generic BTC black hole, the region that you have to consider is that one. So this is the region where the norm is positive. So, and this one is excluded. And so now, the locus where this identification Killing vector is zero is what we call the singularity of the black hole, which is a causal singularity, if you want.
So which two vectors? What are you identifying?
So if you look in SL2R, okay, so G is in SL2R, which is equal to ADS3. The point you have to identify is just I have to identify this with exponential of AH, well M G exponential minus BH, and or plus if you like. So this is the point. Of course, what happens is that these Killing vectors that you use for the identifications have to be non-chiral. Because if you look, for example, at these guys, these Killing vectors have a constant norm. So they do not define for you a singularity because they generate like geodesics, if you like. So they are not suitable for identifications, to get black holes, at least. Okay.
Identifying any two elements that are related by multiplying by e to the h from left and e to the e from right, for example?
Yeah, exactly. No. If you want, this generates a curve into your manifold, a lot of curves, like that passes by j, and you identify discretely along that curve.
But what are these pairs? Like?
So that pair just means, so this generates this diffeomorphism, or the one parameter subgroup. So this AH is here, this BH is here, and so if I put H0, it just like a left translation, if you like. Maybe it's a little bit confusing. Okay, so you have this, you have a causal singularity, and you can show that in these spacetimes, horizons exist for J smaller or equal than M, and otherwise you have a naked causal singularity, which is the usual relation that you have for black holes. And another thing is that, where I'm going to write. So the last thing is that if you look at the family of BTC metric, which depend on M and J, so the ADS3 metric is recovered for M is equal to minus 1 and J equals to 0. So actually you can write the following thing for the spectrum, if you like, in ADS3 gravity. So here you have the BTC black holes. Here you have the extremal black holes. Here you have the vacuum black hole. And you can see ADS3 as a kind of ground state of the theory. And there is actually a mass gap between ADS3 and the vacuum black hole. Okay. So as we have seen yesterday, there is one thing that one can do using these two ingredients is to try to explain the entropy of these BTC black holes, and this can be done through the Cauchy formula. So the Cauchy formula tells you that once you have a CFT which has satisfied some nice properties like modular invariance, of which you know the left and right central charges and the eigenvalues of L0 and L0 bar, if we can identify them. So here, this L0 and L0 bar, so okay, this gives you the asymptotic number of, you can count the asymptotic number of states with a given and large values of L0 and L0 bar. So what I will call S Cauchy is 2 pi CL. So here I'm going quite fast because it's something we heard already yesterday. And so actually you can try to apply this to the BTC black holes because we know we have these Brown-Nenow asymptotic symmetries with which we can identify the L0 and L0 bar eigenvalues as the mass and the angular momentum of the black holes. And actually, it turns out that if you compare this formula for the entropy, like the microscopic entropy, to the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy for the BTC black hole, actually it matches. So okay. So any questions about that? Because I'm going really fast, but we heard it already yesterday, so I don't want to bore you too much. Okay. So these are the three ingredients that we are going to use. So asymptotic symmetries, the fact that we have black holes in the phase space, and the fact that we have the Cardy formula that allows us to check and to verify that there is a kind of matching between accounting of states in the CFT and the geometric Bekenstein-Hawking entropy. Okay, so let me turn. So this was for pure gravity in 2 plus 1 dimension, but we have heard yesterday that there was another theory that has attracted a lot of attention in the recent months, which is topologically massive gravity. So, which is obtained by adding to the Einstein-Hilbert action, which depends with a negative cosmological constant, a Chern-Simons term for a spin connection. Okay, I'm not going to write the term, but schematically it looks like. Okay. So the equations of motion for this model are just given by this one. Okay, so this is usual Einstein tensor, and this is the Cotton tensor. So the Cotton tensor actually plays the role of the Weyl tensor in three dimensions. So in three dimensions, the Weyl tensor is identically zero. And so you can use another tensor that tells you if a manifold is conformally flat or not, which is the Cotton tensor. So a 2 plus 1 dimensional manifold is conformally flat if and only if the Cotton tensor vanishes. But we know that in 2 plus 1 dimension, if a metric is solution to Einstein's equation, then it's conformally flat. Then of course it will have vanishing Cotton tensor. This means that all solutions to Einstein are solution to TMG. So in particular ADS3 and the BTC black holes. So actually you can redo all the things I have been telling you here. You can compute the asymptotic symmetries of ADS3 that do not change. You can realize them as charges. You can compute the central charge. So the central charge will change because the theory changes, so the charges change. But also there are also black holes, so the charges of the black holes will also change with respect to their values in pure gravity. And with this you can also check that the Cardy formula, so this change, but also the geometric entropy changes because the theory is different. And so everything goes through and everything works for ADS3 and BTC black holes in TMG. But as we have seen also yesterday, there is a problem, which is the following. So, but so when mu L is different from 1, where mu L are the parameters of the theory, ADS3 is unstable. So So if you want to make sense of the theory away from that mu L equals to one point, which is a chiral point, called the chiral point, you cannot use actually ADS3 as a vacuum. And this you can see by computing linearized perturbations around ADS3, computing the energy of the propagating mode, and you can see that this mode has a negative energy, so it destabilizes the background. So ADS3 is unstable, but of course, this doesn't prevent us from having other backgrounds that could be seen as a vacuum of the theory. Another constituent. Stable vacuum. And actually it has been proposed by in a paper some months ago that so-called warped ADS3 spaces could provide a way out. So let me just define what these spaces are. So it's really easy. And Geoffrey actually mentioned this yesterday in his talk. So warped ADS3. So the metric of these spaces are just obtained by, if you like, squashing or stretching the metric of ADS. So where these guys are chiral killing vectors of the form 0x in these notations. So these generate the right translations. So there are three types of deformation that you can consider, because this vector can have three different types. It can be time-like. So if you take psi 0h, it's called space-like warped. And so the isometric group preserved by this deformation consists of all the killing vectors that commute with this vector. This is a simple check that you can do. And so the isometric group is actually, in that case, SL2R cross U1 space. So, and this one is precisely the 0H that you use in the deformation. But you can use also a time-like one or another one. So these are the three different warped ADS3 backgrounds that you have.
What is h squared, the coefficient of that zeta mu?
Oh, it's a number. Sorry, it's a squashing parameter. Oh, yes, of course, it's different from that guy. So it's a number. Okay, so let me first, so I will try to briefly describe all of these spaces and just give their properties and why they are, why they were proposed as interesting backgrounds. So I will first focus on the space like one. Space-like warped ADS3. So let me just write down the metric of this space.
The writing is wrong.
Ah, sorry. So this is the metric of the space-like warped ADS3, and so you can notice that when h is equal to 0, this is actually the ADS3 metric, but written in a strange way, and it's actually written in a way that makes apparent the fact that ADS3 can be seen as a R vibration over a base, which is ADS2, so this is R. And actually, this guy is just a form which is dual to the killing vector, which is d over dx. So this metric preserves SL2R cross U1 isometry with this U1 generated by the killing vector d over dx. Okay, for those of you which are familiar with Kerr CFT, of course you know that this space is important in the Kerr CFT correspondence because this metric is exactly a constant polar angle section of the near horizon geometry of extreme Kerr, and I will come back to that a little bit later.
X is 2 pi identified?
No, all the three coordinates. In the global thing, the three coordinates are arranging in R. Even in ADS3 actually, so R. Dx, R in R.
Sorry, I thought roughly speaking T was like global time, R was the radial coordinate, and then...
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Then you should have the angle.
Yeah, but actually you don't really see the... If you want to see the boundary of ADS3 in these coordinates, it looks really strange. You don't have this large R. Actually, the boundary is at large R and large X in these coordinates, which is kind of tricky. Okay. Yeah, actually, if you look at the boundary of ADS3 in these coordinates, you can see that you have something like strips. So this would be R going to plus infinity. This is R going to minus infinity. And then these lines correspond to X going to plus infinity. And this X minus infinity. So it's not completely trivial to see the asymptotic structure in these coordinates. This is one of the problems, actually.
In Kerr CFT,
X is an angle. So it's completely different asymptotic structure. So, okay. Okay, so just some notation. So, for this metric to be a solution to the equations of motion, you should have the following identification of the parameter. So this is a relation between this crushing parameter and the parameters of the theory where nu is mu L over 3. So actually when nu squared is bigger than 1, so the fiber is stretched, and when nu squared is smaller than 1, so this is this is 4 nu squared. Is it plus 1? Plus 3, sorry. Oops. Okay, so the fiber is squashed. And so, depending on the values of these parameters, you talk about space-like squashed or space-like stretched ADS3, and the qualitative behaviors are quite different, as we will just see.
These spaces are. Do they go over to ADS3 on the boundary? Are they normalizable or non-normalizable?
So the asymptotic. So the warped ADS3 has a completely different asymptotic behavior than ADS3. So adding this term here shows you that you have a dominant term that appears in the metric. So it's not asymptotically ADS3 in any way.
So but then, mm-hmm. You're saying that it could be the end point of the instability of the tachyon
part. I'm not really saying that. Okay. I will discuss this a little bit later, but. So it's not even obvious that you can define a phase space that has both warped ADS3 and an ADS3, which you would need if you want to say that one decays into the other one. It's not completely obvious. So
it's just from the point of view of conformal field theories, they look like different theories, right? Not different states in the same theory, because you're saying that.
So I think okay, I will say a little bit more later, but it's not even sure that this background is dual to two-dimensional CFT.
Fine. Okay.
This is what I'm going to say now, actually. So the conjecture conjecture. So, the conjecture, I will just quote this paper. So, with suitable. And this is the devil is in the details. This is synthetically stretched. Warped. ADS3. Boundary conditions. Quantum. TMG is dual to 2D CFT with the following central charges. CL is 4 nu square. And CR is 5 nu square. Okay, this is the conjecture. So I will motivate why people were led to this conjecture, and I will try to give some checks or counter checks of the conjecture. And so note that in particular this assumes that warped ADS3 of course is stable. And so there has been a paper 2 days ago about that topic, so I will comment on that too.
So is it known what the suitable means?
I will try to explain that.
Sorry, let's see, the denominator is G or 6?
Oh, it's G, sorry. Yeah. Okay, so let me try to motivate that conjecture. I will keep maybe this. So the motivation for this conjecture is mainly based on the analogy of the ADS3 and BTZ story. So what is the motivation, which is given, so it's still the same paper. So the first motivation is that, so there exist black holes that are obtained by performing discrete identifications in this background. So it's in the same way as BTZ black holes are constructed out of ADS3, there exist so-called warped black holes that can be constructed by identifying along, well, orbits of Killing vectors in this spacetime. So there exist black holes as discrete quotients of warped energy. So, of course, this is not a motivation, but this is what I will need just after. So these black holes, if I express them in some coordinates T, R, and phi, they depend on two parameters, mass and angular momentum. I will not write the metric, but I will just write one metric component, which is important. So this is, so phi here is actually an angle. So phi is the Killing vector along which you do identifications, like for BTZ. And so what you see here, if you have a completely qualitative different behavior according to the sign of nu. So if nu squared, so first when nu squared is equal to 1, these warped black holes are just the BTZ black holes, the rotating BTZ black holes. When nu square is smaller than 1, you observe that for large radius, this guy will dominate and will become negative. And so phi will become time-like, and so in the asymptotic region, these black holes will have closed time-like curves. And so this has been called Gödel black holes by some people, including Geoffrey and others. Gödel black holes, and when nu squared is bigger than 1, you have regular Lycos. So actually, this is one reason why they insist on the fact that they concentrate on stretched warped ADS tree, because in these range of parameters, you have regular black holes.
At very large U, these central charges are going to zero. Are there unitary representations?
Or maybe I missed a factor. But that's, so what happens when nu, so nu is mu L. I don't know, actually. So what is mu L going to infinity? Is just L going to, okay, it's just dropping the Chern-Simons term. Yeah, the problem is that when you take mu to infinity, you drop the TMG term, the Chern-Simons term, and the background is no longer a solution. So, well, I'm not sure it makes really sense to take that limit with, well, the suitable boundary conditions do not make sense because you don't satisfy the equations of motion.
But for v equal to 1, that's just your usual ADS3.
I will comment on that. But when u is equal to 1, these are indeed the left and right central charges for TMG with ADS, with Brown and O boundary conditions. Yeah.
Why mu L equal 1 is not a special value?
Why should it be? Yeah, sure, but this is for ADS3. You're talking about a completely different background, different boundary conditions.
So it's a special value. I mean, you just said that for nu L equals, was it for nu equals 1?
So for nu equals 1 reduced to BTZ, yeah, which is nu L equals 3. Okay.
I don't know if you're going to talk about this, but is there in the instability that you see in ADS, can you see a sign that you're sort of pointing toward this space-like warped deformation? I mean, is it a little bit of warping or something that you start turning on? Or?
In the instability in ADS3?
Yeah, the unstable mode or the tachyon that you see in ADS3, does it look at all like, you know, a little bit of warping starting or something like that?
I don't know. So what? No?
The unstable mode satisfies, at least at linearized level, satisfies Brown and O boundary conditions.
Yeah, but you might have thought that, okay, you won't see it at infinity because...
Yeah, at linearized level.
You could see a little bit of stretching starting somewhere, which just goes up to infinity very fast.
What do you mean see a little bit of stretching?
Well, the claim is, or the hope is, that this is the ground state of the theory.
Yeah.
And so I was just wondering if there was any sign that the space wants to be in that state. So it starts sort of stretching. No, this is not tunneling. This is just actual evolution. So you're in some unstable solution, and you're starting to roll toward a stable one. And it would have been sort of evidence for the conjecture if you could see that that's the way the space wants to
form.
No, the idea is that if you don't change at infinity, just in the interior, inside some finite ball, can you see the space starting to stretch in some way that this is sort of suggesting?
Yeah. Okay, I don't know, but it's a good question.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Before the black holes, what are the causal properties of the...
They are completely fine. They are geodesically complete and...
And it's stably causal, or...?
Sorry?
And it's stably causal?
Stably causal, what do you mean? So there are no closed timeline curves. It's, well, it's a causal.
And the infinity boundary is well-defined and...
Okay, if you accept that they are... Like, in these coordinates that the boundary is like, okay, it's not clear when you warp the thing what the boundary is. So it's mostly like you take the, okay, I will say a word on that, but if you take the null warp, you get the Sun's metric, and you don't really have a nice conformal representation of the space. So you don't really know what the boundary of that space is, well, as far as I can tell. Okay. So these black holes, they look pretty much like BTZ even when nu is different from one. So they have chronological singularity where d phi becomes null, and they have horizons when we have some relation satisfied between m and j, like j has to be smaller than m, which is a little bit generalized in that case. So how were they led to conjecture these values of the central charge? Well, basically they just compute the geometric entropy of these black holes, to the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy that you can compute, and they compared it to the Cardy formula for L0 and L0 bar are known in that case. These are just given by some combination of the conserved charges of the black holes, and by matching the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy with the Cardy entropy, they were led just they said, okay, the matching works if CL and C-right are precisely these values. So it seems a little bit like tricky and fitting, and so as Bekenstein-Hawking to the Cardy formula, so matching works for given values of CL and CR. Okay, this is the main motivation of the conjecture, which seems quite weak. But actually, they argue the following thing. So first, it wasn't sure that it would work. So because the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy depends on the mass and angular momentum of the black hole, but also depends on the parameters of the Lagrangian, which are mu and L. So the Cardy formula here, so L0 and L0 bar depend on the parameters of the black hole and on mu and L too. But of course, CL and C-right shouldn't depend on the parameters of the black holes. Like in ADS3, the central charge is just 3L over 2G and doesn't depend on the parameters of the black hole. So it wasn't completely obvious that it would be possible to match the two formula, that it could be written as this splitted sum, and with CL and C-right that depended only on the parameters of the Lagrangian. So the first motivation, it works. So the second motivation is that when nu square goes to 1, CL and C-right go to the to the CL left and C-right for ADS3. And the third motivation is that CL minus C-right for nu squared going to 1 is the same as CL minus C-right that you get from ADS3. And this should be because the difference of the central charges actually measure the diffeomorphism anomaly of your theory. So TMG is not, it's only diffeomorphism invariant up to a boundary term. And so actually your boundary stress tensor is not conserved, and this non-conservation is measured by the difference of the central charges. And of course, again, it should only depend on the Lagrangian and not on the particular background that you're considering. So okay, so these are the motivation for the conjecture. So let me. Yeah. Sorry. Did I say something? Sorry. Yeah, it's true for. Yeah.
For B squared going to 1, weren't you saying that it's not the Brown-Hanow boundary conditions, or?
I didn't say that. No, I said that for general nu, I will comment on that later. It's not sure that, okay, I haven't talked yet about boundary condition or anything. But when nu goes to 1, what you have is that this term is 0.
Right.
And so your space reduces to ADS3.
Right. But from yesterday, we had that when mu L is equal to 3, in particular, the ADS solution is unstable.
Yeah, right.
So with the usual boundary conditions, that's not a solution.
That's not a stable solution, but you can still classically you can define boundary conditions.
But
even
here, you wanted to say that with some boundary conditions, even for mu L equal to 3, or V equal to 1, you have a stable solution.
This is what I would like to be able to say.
Clearly, the boundary conditions here cannot be the same as the boundary conditions.
No, they are different. Yeah. For what?
If they are different, then the matching of the central charges is not.
No, they are different. But when U goes to 1, you could say that the boundary conditions tend to the Brownian boundary conditions.
No, they cannot. Because if they did, then the mu L equal to 3 would be a stable solution, which from yesterday's talk, at least, I gathered that it wasn't.
But
I thought for mu L not equal to 1 with Brown-Hanno boundary conditions, ADS 3 is not a stable solution.
But ADS3 and Brownian boundary. Okay, you can study.
So I'm not sure what you wanted to talk about when you said warped ADS3 may be stable, but you did at one point say you were most interested in the region nu squared or mu, is it V or
nu squared bigger than one. Yeah.
And so that's certainly one possible approach, and I note the approach of the paper that came out a few days ago, was to only claim stability for nu squared greater than 1 and not to claim it for nu squared less than 1. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was just wondering why mu squared going to 1, the agreement of the central charges can be taken as any kind of evidence.
Because I would say that you can compute central charges of ADS3 even if ADS3 is unstable.
No, but it's the matter of the boundary conditions, right? So I think the boundary conditions have to be different from the Brown-Hanno boundary conditions if there is a chance of it being stable. And
I'm a little bit confused about the relationship between stability and boundary conditions.
No, I thought you wanted to say that there are some boundary conditions for any value of mu.
I see. Okay.
These solutions are stable.
Okay, I see. Wait, okay. That's true. But the point is that here I'm talking about nu bigger than 1, that's fine. But the point is that here, this is for nu bigger than 1, which is mu L bigger than 3. So anyway, mu L equal to 1 is not.
No, I'm not considering mu L equal to 1. I'm considering mu L equal to 3.
So ADS3 is unstable, so the boundary condition would have to be different. Yeah.
In which case, the central charges would also have to be different, and there's no reason a priori why their numerical agreement. It's not obvious they would have to be the same, right?
Yeah, but I don't see why the central charge should be different.
It's different boundary conditions. The Brown-Hanno analysis would have to be redone.
You can compute a central charge just without boundary conditions if you are. Without general boundary conditions.
If you make the boundary conditions so tight that only the vacuum exists in the theory, the central charge is different.
Is different.
It's different. It's zero.
It's not even clear you have a verse.
Is that true?
Yeah. I thought the central charges of low gravity are the same ones as for ferromagnetic. It's
So if you think of the central charges governing the growth and density of states, it's clearly affected by the boundary conditions, because if you make the boundary conditions very tight, you can remove all the states of the theory.
Yeah. Okay, that's true.
So you know what the boundary conditions are, the suitable...
Okay, I will just continue on that.
I just have a simple question, but you say the left and right central charge, is that... You don't have SL2R squared. Is this like the central charge for the U?
Okay, I'm going to talk. I will just say that now. But okay. I don't have a good question to your question. A good answer to your question. But it's a good point. So now let's turn to some other possible checks of the. Or unchecks of the correspondence. So actually here, what they did is that they just assumed that you have two Virasoro algebras hidden somewhere, and they find the central charge C left and C right. So one natural thing, one natural question one could ask is that can we redo the things in more logical order by starting with warped ADS tree, compute the asymptotic symmetries, determine the asymptotically conserved charges, and see if we have two Virasoro algebras in the asymptotic symmetries. So this is a thing that one, a natural question to ask. And so this is what we did. And actually what happens is that, so I just remind you, so what happens in ADS3, the SL2R cos SL2R exact isometric group is extended into two copies of Virasoro algebra. What happens here in warped ADS3? So we have SL2R cross U1 isometry. And it turns out that the asymptotics, if you compute the asymptotic symmetries of these spaces, this exact isometric group is extended into the semi-direct product of a Virasoro algebra and a U1 current algebra. So these ones has generators Lm, and this guy has generators Tn. And so L minus, so the exact isometries are just given by these ones, and U1 is T0. Okay, so you have these asymptotic symmetries, and then of course again, a fine new one. Yeah. So yeah, okay. So the commutation relation are this, so ln as usual, and ln tm is minus m tn plus m, and the tn commutes. So now, of course, you know that the interesting things. So I'll keep this. I think interesting thing appears when you realize these asymptotic symmetries as asymptotically conserved charges. And then what happens? So if you define QLN, so the conserved charge associated with LN by these.
You've got an asymptotic symmetric group. So then you've specified your boundary conditions.
Right.
Okay. Yes.
There's some concrete boundary condition.
Yeah, exactly. I will write them down. Yeah. Okay, but the first time we did the computation, we worked with a very restricted phase space, which just consisted in black holes and the descendants of the black holes. Just like if you were, but this is enough to compute a central charge actually. But okay, but afterwards I will get to there. Get there. Okay, and so if you realize this charge is true, this algebraic charge is true, the Poisson bracket of charges, what you get is the following. Blah, blah, blah. And then Tn is minus m, Tn plus m, and Tn. Tn is k delta n plus m, 0, some m. Okay, so what are the values that we get for this c and this k? So for the c, we find precisely the right central charge here, cr. And for the k, we get something strange, and I'm not sure. Okay, we can interpret it, so we get something like 1 over CL. Okay, but so the first problem is that. Let me talk about boundary conditions. So and actually, these asymptotic symmetries are realized on a phase space on a set of boundary conditions, which are of the form, I don't know if I'm going to write them all. G phi phi is 3 over L mu squared minus 1 R squared plus big O of R. Then you have other boundary conditions. GTT is 1 plus big O of R minus 1. And okay, you have and others. So what are the properties of these boundary conditions and of these asymptotic symmetries? So actually, the phase space that is defined here is invariant under the asymptotic symmetries. So if you act with this transformation on a metric of this phase space, you will stay in the same phase space as it should. So the charges associated with all these asymptotic symmetries are well defined, they are conserved, finite, etc. And so the black holes, the warped black holes, are included in this phase space.
V squared equal to 1, there's something in the G5, I mean, so you have to specify it a little bit more additionally, or because your first term...
So this is 1 and it's not big O of 1.
No. The first term vanishes, right? The leading term vanishes for V.
Here?
G5.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, so okay. So this is for new different from 1. So these asymptotic symmetries that you computed is for new different from 1, because you see that the boundary conditions completely change when, so the leading term completely changes when u is 1 or different from 1. So, okay, so the one question one could ask is that, okay, the only point where we could compare the Brown and Hope boundary conditions, and these boundary conditions, is for nu is equal to 1. Because when nu is different from 1, the BTC black hole do not satisfy these boundary conditions because the leading term changes. So the only point where you could compare both would be at nu is equal to 1. But if you compare them, they are different. So they look the same, but for example, in Brown and Hope boundary condition, you would have a big O of 1 here. But here, in our boundary conditions, it is fixed to a given value. And you have also another term which is subleading in Brown and Hope with respect to the ones that we allow. So it's not clear how both boundary conditions fit together.
So the fact that you're only getting one copy of the Virasoro algebra, does that mean that the original motivation that you quoted is now gone?
No, okay, this just means that maybe we haven't been looking hard enough. So I will just...
But there might be modified boundary conditions which have two...
Yeah, so actually, so it's still an open... So the question... I wanted to do a blackboard with open questions. So an open question for space-like warped. So where is CL and where is the other Virasoro? So, and this means, can we find more general boundary conditions such that the asymptotic symmetries have two Virasoro algebras? And in that case, is the other central charge reproducing the C left? So. And actually, it's amusing to know that so the Virasoro algebra that we have is basically exactly one of the two copies of the Virasoro of Brown and Hope. If you map Brown and Hope on these boundary conditions, one of the Virasoro is exactly one of these.
Does that follow from the symmetry? Because you really didn't destroy one of the SL2Rs at all.
Yeah, but basically.
It only affected the other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's exactly the SL2R that you didn't destroy just is enhanced to a Virasoro like it would happen in ADS3.
Is it the SL2R? Yeah.
What is the meaning of K equal 1 over CL?
This is why I put it in brackets, because I don't know. So I just, I don't know if it's a numerical coincidence or... But that is central. Okay, that it's precisely that functional dependence on the parameters that appear in K. Maybe it's not relevant or anything. Oh, it's just a way to
use the Cardes formula as CL would, or.
So we cannot apply Cardes formula here because Cardes formula just applies for a theory which has two Virasoro algebras and commuting, and this is, we don't have it here. You can reproduce half of the Cardes formula with the C, with the Virasoro that you have, and for the right you miss something and you don't know what to put inside. I see no reason of putting 1 over K or something in the Cardes formula.
Are there any right moving stations? Are there any left moving states in your theory?
Um, What do you mean left moving?
You don't have an
SL to R.
What is your left moving sector?
Yeah, somehow it should be hidden. Well, actually, it's not clear to me if the T should be seen as right moving or left moving. Here, you should, from this commutation relation, you would just say that they are right moving because they seem intricated with the LNs, and just like an additional U1 that comes out. So you don't know at all where the CL is. But on the other hand, the left energy that you would like to put in the Cardy formula is the zero mode of this guy. So in the Cardy formula, you can write it like, so CL, EL, the C right, E right. And this is more or less the charge associated with T0. So although it looks like it's completely right moving, what you would like to put in the Cardy formula seems to be related to this T0. And it's,
what you mean by that is that T0 is associated with the U1 that was preserved from ADS3, and in ADS3 that U1 would have been the left moving.
So basically, if you look at the form of the TN, it looks like something like that. So something like that. So this is the SN, and LN would be something like EN phi d phi plus other terms. So for this guy to make a Virasoro, you would like to have a T here instead of a... Sorry. So for the zero mode, it doesn't change anything. But to have a Virasoro, you would like to have a T here. But if you use these generators, these guys give infinite charges. So you cannot put a T here. A naive guess would be, okay, let's consider other symmetries and put a T there, but it doesn't work. This gives infinite charges.
Is it even in the asymptotic symmetry group?
Well, it depends how you...
Well, with those boundary conditions, you write that?
No. Well, no, I don't, no, no. No, no, of course not.
If you try to construct a Sugawara stress tensor for this U1...
You will get C equals to 1. So it's not CL. So there are two problems. So the first problem is that this T does not commute with LN.
Right.
So if you construct a Sugawara for it won't commute with this one. But maybe you can redefine generators, mix them such that they will commute. I don't know. But anyway, when you do a Sugawara construction with a U1 current, the central charge you get is 1. Then you can say, okay, maybe what you need in the Cardy formula is an effective central charge, and then you have another parameter to fit, which is the lowest eigenvalue of L0. But, well, I'm not sure if you want to do that, if it makes sense. So, okay, so that's it for these boundary conditions. So let me just comment on the paper that came out on Monday. So actually we were talking about space-like warp, but you can wonder about the stability of space-like of these spaces. So this is in the paper. This paper by Guica, Aninos, and Essolé. And so they just redo the linearized perturbation around warped ADS3. So they just look at the linearized equation for H around the warped ADS3 background. And so they find that there is a propagating mode. So non-pure gauge with negative energy. But what happens is that if you look at the behavior of this mode, so this mode at large radius behaves like R to the minus omega of nu. So where nu is the squashing parameter and omega is some function. And so you observe that when nu square is bigger than 1, H doesn't obey the boundary conditions that we wrote. And so, in the same way as the unstable mode in low gravity, the unstable mode in TMG is excluded by Brondino boundary conditions, but it's still allowed in low gravity. So chirogravity is supposed to be stable because you exclude the propagating unstable mode. Here, for nu squared bigger than one, you would like to exclude this mode because it doesn't obey the boundary conditions. So the theory would be okay. On the other hand, when nu squared is smaller than one, H obeys the boundary conditions, so there is no reason to throw it away, and so the theory would be unstable. So now, of course, it's still an open question to see if there are larger boundary conditions than these one that would allow for this unstable mode, which would be the counterpart of the log gravity story for warped ADS3. And also, it's not clear, maybe there exist more restrictive boundary conditions that allow these squashed warped ADS3 spaces. So
this is the only dynamical degree of freedom?
There are the usual non-pure gauge modes, but the way they proceed, actually they completely fix the gauge, so they are only keeping the propagating mode.
In the stable regime, there's no local degrees of freedom.
No. So in the stable regime, so you throw it away and you have only pure gauge, yeah, like in ADS3.
Wait, do you have something on the boundary?
So they have boundary gravitons. I don't know if they are pure large gauge. Let me think.
It must be.
Yeah, I guess there's something that is. Yeah. So the same thing. You have the equivalent of the right moving graviton in ADS3, which is non. Well, okay. Which can be written as Lx psi of G bar, where Lx psi belongs to the asymptotic symmetry algebra, so which is non-trivial. Space like warp. So okay, so this is some more open question. It's included in this algebra. Okay, so that's it for this space like warp. Let me just mention something more.
So in the regime where this thing is stable, all the BTZ black holes are allowed by these boundaries. You probably have this thing.
So this is for nu square bigger than one. So BTZ black holes are not there.
Are not there. So only states are boundary gravitons, apparently.
Yeah.
There are black holes,
but
they're not the BTZ ones.
They're not the BTZ. Yeah.
The warped black holes.
That's what I meant. The warped equivalent of the BTZ.
They are there and they are regular and they are nice. So when U square is bigger than one, it's just there where the black holes that you have don't have closed time-like curve and a strange behavior at infinity.
And the black holes that exist, I mean, are they? They're all of them, right? I mean, the number of black holes is the same as the number of all BTZ black holes in ADS3? Or is it like a chiral half?
There is a two-parameter family, and these parameters are not. I'm not sure about that, but what I can say is that for nu squared equal to one, when you try to match these warped black holes and the BTZ black holes, you can only match them when for one sign of the angular momentum, basically. So I would say that maybe you have. I'm not sure. Isn't it?
Let's look at this way. Are there warped black holes with arbitrary values of the T0 and L0 charges?
There
is still some work in progress.
Yeah. So it seems that for the phase space to be well defined, you have to fix on the phase space the value of T0. Okay, but fixing the value of T0 is not really a big deal because T0 commutes with all the generators of your algebra. So just like you have different representations of your asymptotic algebra that are labeled by this teaser eigenvalue, which would be like the Casimir in quantum field theory or the mass of the particle or something. So it seems that you have to fix this T0 value here, and which is not the case in BTZ. In BTZ you can have, in your boundary conditions, you have any M. But okay, it's not completely clear to us. So I don't know. Okay, just one comment. So if you take this space-like, so we have looked until now at this space-like warped ADS tree by doing identifications that give you black hole. But there is an identification that you can do, which is just identifying this dx here. So identifying this dx, so the isometric group is equal to r cross u1, dx is here. So identifying along dx is just like identifying with a chiral killing vector, if you like. So this doesn't give you a black hole because the norm is constant. But this identification is precisely the one that is needed for to get the near horizon care geometry at fixed border angle. Then you can see that this metric, it doesn't have a black hole horizon, but it has a killing horizon. Okay? So you can compute the entropy of the killing horizon, so the geometric entropy of this spacetime associated with this killing horizon. And actually what you get is that, again, the Cardy formula will match with the geometric entropy of this horizon if there is no E right, and if the central charge is this time the left central charge, given by that one. So okay, so probably this is the most relevant situation to understand better the Kerr CFT correspondence, but again, it's not clear whether there are boundary conditions. I will let it here so far. So these quotients are called self-dual quotient. So it's not clear if there exist boundary conditions that allow to reproduce CL. From asymptotic symmetries. So naively, you could think, okay, I could just take the asymptotic symmetries that I have in Kerr CFT. So what happens in Kerr CFT, the exact symmetry group is related to the asymptotic symmetry group in a different way. So what you do, you break this SL2R and you only keep a U1. So in Kerr CFT, so the diffeomorphism that you consider to get the right central charge, they actually extend the U1 into a Virasoro algebra, and they only keep a U1 of the SL2R. So if you do the same thing naively in TMG, it doesn't work. The charges you get are infinite again. And you don't get the right central charge either, even if you can work out something. So well, it's still an open question to see if these boundary conditions in Kerr CFT make sense in TMG. Okay, so that's it for...
Before you erase that,
say.
Finish the story about stability. I mean, you're saying there's no propagating modes with energy less than zero. That there are boundary gravitons, I might ask if there are boundary gravitons with energy less than zero, or is that...
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they discussed that, actually, in their paper.
Do they? I don't think they did. I thought you and Jeffrey were working on it.
Yeah, we are finishing.
You don't wish to say the result of this?
Well, let's say for... The Virasoro have a positive spectrum, and you can check the energy of all the boundary gravitons is positive. And now for these the T's, see that they will lower the energy of L0. So that there is some problem with the T's.
Actually, it seems that the.
So it depends really what you mean by boundary condition. If you want to have a lot of, it depends on the number of conditions you impose. If you want to try to break down into the bond and so on, and then if you require also positivity of L0, it's something else that has not been considered yet, and that is worth checking.
So okay, that's all for. I think, okay. So I'm here now. I will talk about the null ward case. So let me just write down the metric, which will probably look familiar.
Do these topological massive gravities arise in any understood string theory compactification?
Well, I think probably Josh can answer the question better than I do, but...
So far, not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, you were saying that you can get the TMG term, but you have a lot of other bunch that you cannot get rid of. So you can construct it, but you have a lot of other matter fields that are present. So let me write the metric for the null warped space. And actually, h square is here plus or minus one because other values can be just absorbed in a change of coordinates. So this is solution of TMG only for mu is equal to one. Okay, for h square is equal to plus minus one. So what is the isometric group of this metric? So we have seen that this would be SL2R cos U1 null. And of course, for those of you familiar with the non-relativistic ADS-CFT story, so this I would call the Schrödinger group in zero spatial dimension, and for C is equal to 2. And here I would have the Hamiltonian generator, dilation, special conformal transformation, and here I would have D plus, which I would call the number operator in that case. Okay, but there are a lot of differences with the non-relativistic ADS CFT story. So actually, there are actually black hole solutions, again, that are obtained as identifications in that background. Okay, so this is quite nice. And again, there exist black holes obtained as identifications in null warped ADS tree. So you can compute their entropy, you can compare to the Cardy formula, and what you are led to guess. So the Cardy formula gives you S Bekenstein-Hawking for these black holes is equal to S Cardy with zero right moving energy and with a C left, which is 2L over G. Okay, so of course that could lead to state a new conjecture that TMG with null warped boundary condition is dual to a chiral 2D CFT. With C is 2L over G. Okay, again, you can ask yourself the question, okay, can we study the asymptotic symmetries of these spaces and reproduce the central charge? And actually, it turns out that this it works better in that case. So this is the work we are doing with Sophie Geoffrey and with Kentaro that's now in Japan. So again, you have the SL2R cross U1 that is extended into SL2R. U1, which is extending to a Virasoro plus a U1 hat. Okay, but actually it turns out that all the charges associated with this U1 hat, which I could call them NM, all the charges are zero. So because all the charges are zero, you just throw them away and they are not realized in the phase space of the black hole solutions and their descendants. And so you find the Virasoro algebra and you actually find the right central charge in that case.
Your h squared being either plus 1 or minus 1?
Sorry?
What was the h squared for that?
Where is the h square? So the h square is equal to 1. So actually, the deformation parameter can always be reabsorbed in change of coordinates, and when you fix it to 1, UL over 3 is equal to 1. So this background is only a solution for a particular value of the couplings.
Minus 1, you, that doesn't pertain to
no, it doesn't change. You get the same central charge, yeah. Okay, so, but actually the point is that these black holes are quite different from the ones that you would like to consider in non-relativistic CFT because the angle that is identified, the coordinate that is identified is d minus instead of d plus. So it's not exactly the same thing you would like to do. So actually, there is a funny thing that you can, so it can be generalized to any z. So to any critical exponent in the relativistic language. So by just replacing 4 by 2z everywhere here, so you have, here you can replace this by 2z, and then you have a set of metrics of which we don't really know if they are black holes, but okay, but they are a solution of TMG and they constitute like a restricted phase space. And if you do the same thing, again, you have an exact isometric group which is smaller than SL2R cos U1. It will only have 2 parameters here and 1 here, but still the asymptotic symmetry algebra is the same. And you again get a Virasoro algebra with a central charge that depends on Z and which is given by a very strange looking formula. So this is valid for z strictly bigger than 1. So of course, then okay, it's not clear whether this makes sense or not, but a question that one could ask is that, so are there black holes that asymptote, I would say, null warped for arbitrary z? It's not really null warped, but okay, for arbitrary z. And the question is there entropy reproduced using this C of Z. So C of Z. Okay. Well, okay, so this is for null warp. So I'm not going to tell much more about, I'm not going to tell much about time-like warps because these spacetimes are either their usual Gödel spacetimes, which are completely, well, pathological. They have closed time-like curves passing through every point. So this is for the stretched case, and in the squashed case, you have a regular spacetime, but it's not known if you have black hole solutions in that case. So it's not known if, well, that space is interesting by itself or not. Okay, so now I'm here now and I have 5 minutes left. So I'll just say one word. So so now if you, so how I'm going to say this in 5 minutes? So, okay. So now if we want to, okay, there is actually a nice way to embed all these spaces in string theory. So so we know in string theory we have the ADS-CFT correspondence, and the better understood situation is the ADS-5-CFT-4 correspondence. But there is one dimension, the correspondence is also really interesting, which is the ADS-3-CFT-2. And the reason for that is that the gravity side is quite well understood because it's described by an exact worksheet CFT. So actually, you're in the ADS-3-CFT-2, you're able to probe the ADS-CFT beyond the supergravity approximation, because in principle, you know the string spectrum beyond alpha prime corrections. So okay, so this is true for ADS-3 because you know that ADS-3 is an exact string background. It just is described by a Wesomino-Witten model. That in principle you have control on it. But of course you can ask the question, so this is true for ADS-3, but we have just seen that there are other spaces that are deformation of ADS-3 that could be or could or could not have a dual description in terms of a 2D CFT. So you would like to understand this from a string theory point of view. But and also ADS-3 CFT2 is useful to describe and to count so microstates of black holes which have an ADS-3 factor in their near horizon geometry. But we have just seen that there are very interesting black holes like the extreme Kerr geometry which do not have ADS-3 factors in their near horizon geometry which have warped ADS-3. So it's probably interesting to see if we can use all the tools that borrow all the tools from ADS-3 CFT2 but for other backgrounds. And it turns out then that you can actually use this, the fact that the background is exact, by deforming the conformal filter which is associated with ADS-3. So ADS-3 is described by this SL2R Wesomino-Witten model. But once you have a conformal filter, you know that you can do a marginal deformation on it. So you keep a conformal filter, but you change the theory. And it turns out that if you look at marginal deformation of this SL2R Wesomino-Witten model, you get a bunch of new backgrounds which range from black string, Gödel spaces, two-dimensional black holes times a flat direction. But actually, it turns out that in the moduli space of the marginal deformations of Wesomino-Witten model, you have also this warped ADS-3 spaces. So in principle, you have an exact conformal field theory description of these warped ADS-3 spaces. Now you can ask the question, okay, in principle I know what the dual field theory is in ADS-3 CFT2, and so the question is that if I deform the gravity side, can I see what happens on the gauge theory side? So in principle this is hard, and this is hard, so I will leave this as an open question. deformations. So, okay, since we have only 30 minutes for the lunch break, I think I will finish here. Thank you for your time.
Just about this, so you say that the bound, I didn't understand sure. That you said that this warped ADS space was a marginal deformation. Of what theory, the boundary theory or the worksheet theory?
No, the worksheet theory. Yeah.
So could we ask this question about the boundary theory? Do you know how?
Of course. Oh, okay, I can maybe say one word on this. So if you're interested in the near horizon geometry of this D1, D5 system, so you have this ADS-3 cross S3 cross T4 background, which is described by an exact Wesomino-Witten model, which is SL2R cross SU2 cross U1. To the force. Actually, it turns out that the marginal deformation that you get on which you have a control amounts to do a TST transformation on this background. So what TST transformation? I don't know if you're familiar with that. Okay. So if you take a U1 inside the SL2R and a U1 inside the U1 to the force, you do a TST transformation, and what you get, the background that you get is basically warped ADS-3 across the rest. Okay, so now if you use your experience from ADS-5 cross S5, what happens is if you do a TST on ADS-5 cross S5 using a U1 from ADS-5 and a U1 from the S5, the resulting theory that you would get is not a marginal deformation of n equals 4 superlinear. It's like, it would be something like, I don't know if Nicolai is here, the dipole theory or some non-conformal theory. So if you just naively extrapolate what happens in five dimensions to three dimensions, you would say that doing this TST transformation on the background would correspond to a non-conformal deformation of the two-dimensional boundary theory. But of course, well, okay. The problem is that the marginal deformations of this boundary theory are less well known than the ones for
spring. Non-conformal and also non-local?
Probably, if you believe what happens in five dimensions or four dimensions, you would say it's non-local too, like a dipole thing. But it's really not clear, and basically, well, it's because the two-dimensional dual theory is far less easy than spring and equals four, probably. So this is one problem that you have to face. But naively, you would say that in string theory, warped DDS tree is dual to a theory which is non-conformal.
You know, all these symmetries exist even at the Orbifold point, where the theory is very well understood. Could you try to see what happens?
Yeah, but the problem is that the Orbifold point, you don't have an exact description.
In space-time, fine. But can you just try to trace through using symmetries with this?
But then somehow you lose the fact that you have an exact worksheet description. But okay. But otherwise,
let's say we forget about the worksheet for a minute.
In principle, you should be able to do that. Yeah. We would like to do that actually, but okay.
But the theory control, what you expect is that it's describable in that limit as a deformation by some irrelevant operator.
Yeah.
And so how to follow a finite flow along an irrelevant deformation is tricky, and that's tricky with a non-locality. At the infinitesimal level, I think it's a local margin of deformation.
Good.
It's just supposed to be straight on some dark fields.
You know, some non-local deformations, like the non-commutative deformation, that just work well. It's possible that.
So that we might be able to see, because it should be some analog of that from the DDS object. Sure.
Okay, I would like to suggest, let's thank Stefan for the talk.